Okay, this coming Shabbos we're going to have the honor and privilege of reading Parshas Mishpatim. We're also going to be doubly privileged as this Shabbos is the first of the four Parshios, the Parsha of Shkolim. And so, Mirtzei Hashem will talk a little bit about that as the year goes on. Let's start off at the beginning. Eila Mishpatim Asher Tasim Lifneim. These are the ordinances that you should place before them. And then the Torah tells us, Kisikna Eved Ivri Sheshaunim Yavod. If you acquire a Jewish slave, he should work for 6 years. And the great Rav of the old city of Yerushalayim, Rav Neben Salz Shalita, noted in the name of his father-in-law, who wondered why the parasha begins with the laws relating to the Jewish slave. After all, these laws were only to apply once they entered Eretz Yisrael. There are other laws that appear in the parasha which applied immediately. So why does the Torah open up with the laws of Eved Ivri? We're coming right from Mount Har Sinai. The Jews got 40 years left in the desert. Why Eved Ivri? Moreover, the Yerushalmi teaches us that the laws of Eved Ivri were taught not just in Mamad Har Sinai, they were still taught while the people were still in Mitzrayim. Now, why was that the time to teach about the laws of a Jewish slave? So Rav Neben Salz's father-in-law answered that the best time to teach about the laws of an Eved Ivri is when one is a slave and understands what it means to be a slave. Hashem wants us to understand, to live, to learn, and to live what we learn, and not just to say the words, to feel what the other person is going through. And only a slave can truly understand what it means to be a slave, what it means to think like a slave. And so therefore, the Torah tells us, in Mitzrayim, God taught them the laws of Eved Ivri. And he teaches it to start off right away. Why is that? That was the first time the Jews had the opportunity to come from that mentality. Anyway, so we find out that the slave is supposed to be a slave for 6 years. And if at that time he says, Ahavti es Adoni, es Ishti ves Banai, lo esei chafshi, right, that he loves his wife and his children, and he doesn't want to go free, so then he gisho Adonav Elohim, the master goes ahead, and he does what's called Ritzias Eved, he pierces his ear with an awl, with a special type of needle. And why is it the ear? So the Gemara in Bava Kamma tells us that the reason why we use the ear is because it's the ear, says Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the ear is the thing that heard, Kili b'nei Yisrael la'avadim v'lo avadim la'avadim, that the Jews are only supposed to be servants to Hashem. And this guy who heard that now wants to take on a different master, so the ear that heard that should be pierced. And Rabbi Chatzka Levinstein noted that homiletically this section does not only speak to the one who is an actual Eved Ivri, but rather to teach us that a human being was not created to be a slave to a human being. A human being was created to be an Eved Hashem. He's supposed to be a servant of God. And what is an Eved? So Rabbi Chatzka Levinstein explains that an Eved lacks personal strength and personal desires, because an Eved is totally submissive to his master. And the same commitment to a master is desirable only when that master is Hashem. So that submission is acceptable only when the master is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And a sefer picked up recently, which has the thoughts of Rav Elia Svei, the late Philadelphia Rosh Hashiva Zatzal, on the Parshios. So Rav Elia apparently told his students that if one is enslaved to his own desires, such a person is also considered an Eved. He's enslaved. And he has acquired a foreign master for himself. And that's a contradiction to serving Hashem. And it needs a corrective action, and it needs a focus. A person has to understand that he can't be tied up with two different senses of servitude. What needs to guide us in our lives is our responsibilities of being an Eved Hashem. And that may be part of the reason why a person who accepts it upon himself the yoke of Torah called Makabal Olav Ola Torah Mavirim Imenu, the Ol of Derech Eretz. Because a person who understands that what he does is serve Hashem, there's no room for anything else to fit on his shoulders. It gives him a focus, it gives him a way to go. The Torah identifies a bunch of the Nezikin, a bunch of the different damages. And here we're told, Ayin Tachas Ayin, that we take an eye for an eye. And the Gemara uses a series of deductive logical arguments to teach us that one is obligated financially to pay. It's kesef, it's mammon, that you pay for an eye. Not the Hammurabi code where you literally pluck out one guy's eye for the others. But how can the Gemara go against an obvious literal meaning of the Pasuk? The Pasuk says an eye for an eye. And if the Pasuk was supposed to teach us that it's mammon that we have a responsibility to pay financially, why doesn't the Torah just say, mammon, mammon, tachas ayin? So the late great chief rabbi of Israel, Rav Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Kuk Zatzal, was once asked this question by some of the authors in the land of Israel. And he explained that while the punishment is only financial, what the Torah is teaching us is that the offender who gets away with paying the penalty really deserved a much more serious penalty. He really should have been mechuyev klapi shmaya ayin tachasai, and he needs to feel that pain that the other person has. But still, al pidin, based on the halachic responsibility, all he does is pay mamum. The Torah tells us, kol almana v'yasom lo sa'anun, don't distress a widow or an orphan. Why? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, v'shamati ki chanun ani, I will hear it, and because I am a chanun, I am one who's merciful. And Remailich Bitterman Shlita points out that this is a great source for one who calls out to Hashem when he has nowhere else to turn to. Says the Rebbe Remailich, such tfilos, when a person feels he's got nowhere else to turn, nobody else to hang on, those tfilos are sincere, and they're unlikely to go without a response. So parenthetically, with that message, the understanding, don't distress somebody who's got nowhere else to turn, because he turns and he says, Ein lanu al mili sha'ein el al avinu shabbat shamayim, nothing, no one else to turn to, but to our Father in heaven. The Daskenu Mibalayatosis adds that those who are careful not to distress the widow or the orphan, those people who don't distress those who are down on their luck, they'll also benefit. Because when the orphan and the widow give brachos of praise and gratitude for the good done to them, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to hear that as well, and he's going to be positive in his response. Then as we get further into what is identified as the Kriyas HaTorah of certain points during the year, certain Yom Tovim, Sukkot in particular, we're told, Shalosh Rigalim, Tachogli Bashana, we're supposed to celebrate three Rigalim, and then we're told, Shalosh Pe'amim Bashana. First we're told to be Ola Regal, and then we're told three times. Why does the Torah refer to the times as both Rigalim, and then again as Pe'amim? And what's the difference? So Rashi notes that even in the Shemitah year, the people will still observe the Regalim. That's why we repeat it. And Rav Nissen Alpert Zatzal explained why. During other years, the Yom Tovim, Sukkot, Pesach, and Shavuos are all opportunities to thank Hashem for His involvement in the agricultural cycle of the year. And that's why in those years they're called Regalim, from the word Regal, as a reason for the trip, a Siba. Like Yaakov Avinu argues, L'regel hamlocha asher lefanai, u'l'regel hayiladim, right? It's on the basis of the reason why I am going ahead to proceed. But in the Shemitah year, the ground's not being worked. And so this reason is not present. However, lest one think that he has no obligation to be u'l'regel, the Torah still says, you still have a responsibility to go, shalosh pe'amim. You still have to go because the time of the year demands that we go up and have a rendezvous with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even if it's not based on the agricultural cycle of the particular individual. Torah tells us, Vayikach Moshe Sadam Vayizrok Al Ha'am. Moshe took the dam at the time of Matan Torah and he sprinkled it on the people. And Rashi explains that this teaches us that Chazal entered a bris here with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that bris involved a mi'ilah, a tvilah, a hazah, as there's no hazah without tvilah. But Rav Gifter Zatzal pointed out that the preparation for Matan Torah described here is very intense. First, it required a communal acceptance, as described in Parashas Yisro. And after that, there needed to be a process that removed the regular Ben Noach status from them, as described over here. And then, only afterwards, did they enter a bris, at which time they were finally prepared to receive the Torah. So Rav Gifter Zatzal explained that if this is the preparation for the nation receiving the Torah, it must also be the attitude that we use when we get ready to go study the Torah. We also have to take an attitude that we are preparing, that we're about to get into something special. Rabbi Rakefet, one of the wonderful Magide Shir in the Gris Kolel, describes how people get prepared to go listen to HaMashpia, Rabbi Moshe Weinberger, in Eretz Yisrael. He says there's a whole setup, there's a whole style, and this puts out and creates the mood. Those who grew up in other cycles of Orthodoxy may have also seen this in the Bnei Akiva or in the NCSY, when there is some sort of hachana Well, all of this happens not only to create the moment, it's there to create the ultimate, the sense that Limud HaTorah has to be studied. I still remember at the beginning of Isman, Rabbi Baruch Simon Shalita, my dear counselor and one of my Rebbeim, took the time out at the beginning when he started to teach the Bachurim in the yeshiva. He would make sure to begin with a nigun, Avinu Avarachamon, because a person who goes ahead and approaches Isman with a sense of preparation, with a sense of awareness, he's ready to understand what it means to be Mekabel Torah. We need to take that into our mind each and every day when we open the Sefer. It will give a new perspective to what learning Torah is all about. Anyway, Moshe Rabbeinu was told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Be'et Nalacha, as a luchos, as a Torah, a mitzvah, asher kasafti, laho rosam. And the Gemara here learns that Hashem was going to give the written Torah, the Aseres Adibros, the Torah Shebal Peh, and the Nevi'im and the Ksuvim all over here. Now Rashi at the beginning of Malachi explains that anything that any other Navi was going to say was given to Moshe at Har Sinai. And similarly, the Mabit notes that the reason that some people say when they bench and they say the first bracha of Birkas HaMazon, many of them end off with Ka'amur Poseach Es Yadecho Maspil Echol Chayretzon. This is a strange idea because Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the first bracha Birkas HaMazon, so why is he going ahead to you cite a pasuk that David HaMelech, who didn't exist at the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, how is he able to use Ka'amur Poseach Es Yadecha? Says the Ma'abit, that's not a question. Moshe Rabbeinu wrote Poseach Es Yadecha. David HaMelech revealed it within a Tehillim context. But everyone else knew it at the time of Moshe Rabbeinu because he knew anything else that was destined to be Torah-based. And so therefore, in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, they would have said, according to this argument, Umeitiv lakol umeichin mazon lechobi yosav asher bara poseach es yadech umasbil afol chai ratzon baruch atah hazan es hakom. Reshach the Shalita would often remind us of this Gemara and this Mabit to remind us that it's only based on this idea that Anshei Knesset HaGedola were able to add to the canon and to compose the Torah Shebal Peh into a formal Torah. Without it, adding would have been a subtraction from the Torah's divine nature. We have such a responsibility. I want to share two final thoughts, one on Parsha Shkolim and one for the Haftorah. The first one comes from the first words of Parsha Shkolim, Kisisa es Rosh B'nei Yisrael, more correctly, Kisisa es Rosh B'nei Yisrael. And why is the term Kisisa used instead of Kisispor when you get a count B'nei Yisrael? So Moshe Feinstein's Atzal explained that when it comes to being counted as a member of B'nei Yisrael, it's not enough to be counted. A person has to raise himself up to the standards to earn the title of being a part of B'nai Yisrael. A person has to hold himself up to stand proudly when he accepts the responsibility that being a part is all about. That's the mitzvah of Kisisa, and that's the responsibility we have as we get to the Chachei HaGeula. The Geula only happens when the Am recognizes not only its national state, but the combined efforts of all the individuals who make it up. Finally, in the Haftorah, of course, which is read special for this Shabbos, the Torah tells us the Kohanim should take for themselves Ish Me'es Makaro. Each person should take from his acquaintance, and then they should be able to go ahead, B'chizku Es Berek HaBayis, right? They should go ahead and fix up the damages in the house, wherever it can be found. And the Raga Chavar over here explains that there's a difference between taking things from an individual, which has to be checked to see if he's giving things with a full heart, versus to see if an individual's giving it with a half heart, wherein it has to be re-examined as a donation to the Beis HaMikdash. The Rav Yitzchak Saratsky in the Rinas Yitzchak comes along over here, and he explains why. He says you have to understand that Beis HaMikdash itself has the status of a Karban Tzibur, which means that it cannot be made or maintained by personal monies. It has to belong to the Tzibur. And so hence, when collecting the coinage here, the Navi warns the people to take Ish Me'es Makaro, take from your acquaintances, whereby, if necessary, you can state unequivocally that there each person relinquishes a personal hold over the monies that he or she is giving to the Mikdash. There is a greater purpose than the individual. There is a higher level than the individual. It's less about what I give. Sometimes it's more about what the nation achieves. And we will understand that when we see beyond ourselves and get to the point where we walk together, arm in arm, to the walk onto the Yom Shekulo Shabbos. I wish you a Shabbat Shalom to all.